Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And on this episode, we will be discussing Thunderheart from a 90s film starring Val Kilmer, Sam Shepard, and Graham Greene of Dances with Wolves fame, and directed by Michael Apted. And now, this is one of those ones that is maybe not a Western, as it turns out.
There was a guy on a horse.
There are a lot of Native American concerns in this film. This is about the Native Americans, the Indian population of America today, rather than in the Old West. It's about the all of it takes place on an Oglala Sioux reservation. I forget the name. It's a Great Pine Reservation, something like that.
What was it? Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Big Pine, the Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, in the Badlands, and it deals with a murder mystery taking place on this reservation. The events are greatly inspired by a series of political agitated protests and ultimately murders that took place in the actual on the actual reservation. The very reservation, Sioux Reservation, in the 1970s.
Wow. Did a little research, huh?
There is a... are you familiar at all with the Leonard Peltier case?
No.
He was a... he was jailed for murder of some, I believe some feds, federal agents, if I'm correct. It was all based around the Wounded Knee incident, which took place around that time, where... The they call it the American Indian Movement, AIM, which is what it is actually known as. There is a version of that in the film that is slightly different. It took control of the town, Wounded Knee, and I'm probably talking out of my ass on a lot of this because I did some cursory research. Mostly, what I remember is this film called Incident at Oglala, which is a documentary about the events. And Leonard Peltier, he is in prison now, has been since the 70s, and most people think he's probably a framed innocent man. In sort of the Reuben Carter or like Mumia, a political prisoner, such as it were,
So is he Sue or is he the CIA guy?
He's Sue, yeah.
Or FBI guy.
Yeah, the Sue are the guys that are getting screwed in this, always. This film, Incident at Oglala, that I'm referring to, was directed by one Michael Apted, who directed Thunderheart shortly after. Sort of a fictionalized Hollywood version of this. And it has that on its mind. This is a film largely about Native Americans living today in America and what that is like and how rough that can be and the way that they are still to this day getting screwed over in a lot of respects. Thunderheart also kind of reminded me of Tony Hillerman novels. Are you familiar with Tony Hillerman?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I think it took a lot of inspiration from that, I would say, as well. Maybe not as much as it took from the Oglala incident, but Tony Hillerman, the guy who writes crime fiction set on a reservation with Native American protagonists taking place in the Native American community. Have you ever read any of those?
I read one. I can't even remember the title of it, but I remember liking it.
Yeah, there's a number of them. I don't think he does them anymore, but there were...
It was a series with an Indian cop or something, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Graham Greene character.
I believe there's one is local and one is federal, and they're both kind of, they work together sometimes, or sometimes it's about one, sometimes it's about the other. If I recall. They made a series of TV movies about him for the mystery series with Wes Studi starring as the cop. From Last of the Mohicans.
Have you read him?
I've read a couple of the books. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's good. I like a window into this world. It's fascinating. It's a culture you don't see represented very often.
But it's fascinating, but depressing. I can't believe.
Sure.
Well,
Yeah.
I can believe it because it's happened over and over and over again in U.S. history. People getting screwed over. The white wave, manifest destiny,
Yeah.
doesn't let anybody get in the way.
And in this case, I mean, this is a, I mean, Ray Coutel, the Sam Shepard character, has a monologue about this in the film, actually. These are a conquered people,
Yep.
and so they have very few recourses actually to address any of this. And I got to admit, I'm pretty ignorant on the status of things now on the reservations. I don't, I haven't. Since we went on our family vacation to monuments around the country, I have not set foot on a reservation. I don't know what's going on there now, what sort of leadership they have. But
It's for the most part not quite as bad as it's depicted in the movie.
this
But
refers to a very tumultuous time in America, and that was
right.
also, I guess, going on the reservations as well, certainly in the 70s, with the AIM movement, and as it or it is rep as it is represented in the film Thunderheart, the ARM movement, the
Right.
it's an intriguing thing, and it's a really good setting for a film or any story, really. I guess the Tony Hillerman films do that to an extent, but I can't think of a single other film that takes place on a reservation, modern day reservation. I mean, there must be a few.
I can't think of any films, but the series Longmire on Netflix,
Oh yeah.
Takes place on the reservation.
Oh, is it?
He's a Longmire is actually a sheriff of the territory in the area bordering the reservation, and there's a lot of back and forth and dealing with the reservation cops, Indian cops, and Longmire, and they don't like each other, but they deal with each other. They have to deal with each other on occasion.
Does it have as much reservation culture as this film? Because this film
Yes,
really
quite a
portrays
bit.
that. That's interesting. That
You should check out Longmire.
makes me want to see Longmire more than anything I've heard about it, frankly. I didn't know much about Longmire other than it was, it looked kind of Walker Texas Rangery to me.
Well, no, it's not Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't
It's
kick people,
not
but
anywhere near Chuck
yes.
Norris. In fact, he gets his butt kicked on a regular basis, but
Good show though. I think it's on Netflix, right?
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with Michael Apted as a director?
Nope.
He's a journeyman. He made The World Is Not Enough. It's probably his biggest hit.
Oh.
He's mostly kind of a guy for hire. But the thing he's probably most famous for is a documentary series called that Seven Up, or then well, the first one was called Seven Up, which was about the lives of a handful of 7-year-olds. It was what these 7-year-olds' lives were like. And then 7 years later, he did 14 Up, which was about
With the
them
same kids?
same kids 7 years after
Yeah.
that. And he's been doing this for like 40 years at this point.
Wow.
And there's a whole series of these that you can see. Eventually, he's a very old man now. I think he might be done at this point, but or no, oh, I believe he actually might have passed. Now, oh, hey, research. Good. Did a bunch of research here. but anyway, yeah, they did. Did him up to the 40s, and it's fascinating to see some of these. I haven't watched all of them, but that's sort of what he's known for. It was this real surprise to me to discover that not only had he directed Thunderheart, but also Incident at Oglala, that he himself is very well versed in this world, that that he's taken
Yeah.
an interest in it. Interesting filmmaker, very good, very good. Especially when he's doing his own personal kind of stuff, I think. Although, as this film demonstrates, he's real good at just Hollywood filmmaking, I would say.
It's really well crafted, this film. It flows really well.
Yeah.
And the performances are great, but we can talk about those later, but I thought the way it was put together was just great. Everything flowed. everything made sense moving from one thing to another.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't confronted with something that was kind of out of the blue ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was always a link to what was going on in the main plot.
Yeah. Yeah. It moves real quick. It's a very entertaining just Hollywood film that it's just, and the story is told very, very economically. It's got a bunch of good actors in it. And again, like we were saying, this is a world that does not get represented very often, and it's cool to see. This film is like forgotten, isn't it? I mean, there's no Blu-ray of this. You know, you'd have to order even a DVD is kind of hard to find. I was able to stream it, right? But that was it.
I got it on demand. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody talk about Thunderheart in what feels like decades. It's totally good. This is a film that really
it's
deserves
been decades.
A following, I would say.
I would like to. Well, you know, they kind of set it up there at the very end. The action ends. The main plot ends, and he's drives out to a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're left right there wondering where he's going to go.
It has the exact same end as Castaway. Yeah. It's this is 25 years old now. Did you realize this is a 1992 movie?
Jeez.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. Well, Val Kilmer's seen better days.
Certainly. This is Graham Greene as well, has a very prominent role in this. This is like what he did right after Dances with Wolves. And a well-chosen script, I would say. This is perfect for him.
I really like Graham Greene.
He's awesome.
I think he's great.
Terrific presence. Don't know why he didn't work more. I guess because he's, you know, a very specific vintage of actor. But when he was working in the 90s, he was always on point. He's we talked about him in Maverick a little while ago. He's the best part of
that's
that
right.
movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's the best part of Dances with Wolves, too. He might be the best part of Thunderheart. I'm sure he worked in some other stuff, but those are the ones that spring to mind. And, yeah, I would say that this might be, of those three, I think this is his best film. I don't know. I got to watch Dances again.
I don't know. I think Dances with Wolves is... That's probably his best film.
Okay, yeah, that's an episode one of these days. We'll finally get around to Dances with Wolves. All right, so let's talk about Thunderheart in detail.
All right.
It opens with shots of the Badlands, which are great to look at.
Do you remember the Badlands?
Oh, I remember the Badlands, yeah.
Remember how hot it was and you and I went running down through the Badlands?
Mm-hmm.
And
it was over 100 degrees, yeah.
Over 100 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
We're out there running around in the Badlands.
Yeah, that was awesome. Everyone else wanted to stay in the car. It was just so cool.
They waited on the bench for the bus stop bench, I think.
Mm-hmm.
While we ran through the Badlands.
What a gorgeous piece of geography this is. Like, this is just, how does this even happen? Stuff that is distinctive and odd looking. It looks like an alien planet. And
yeah, on one hand it's beautiful, but on the other hand it's bleak.
Uh-huh. Desolate. Yeah. You can't imagine anything living there. And in fact, I think that's really one of the most striking things about this film as a whole is the third world living conditions that everyone is in, just sort of offset with this absolutely stunning vistas that are in their backyard.
Right.
It's strange. And yeah, it feels like a different world. And it's there.
Yeah,
though.
It is.
Like you go there and that's South Dakota. It's the Badlands and gorgeous, absolutely stunning. Yeah. Anyway, we get a lot of shots of it in this film. I mean, we talk about natural scenery cinematography in this podcast a lot, and this is a good one.
Yeah, no CGI in this film.
No, doesn't look like any sound stages. I mean, I'm sure there's a few interior shots, but mostly this just looks like they were shooting it out in the plains. And
right.
Most of this film is exterior too. Could have been tough to shoot.
Yeah, an awful lot of it. Yeah.
but yeah, I mean the opening, it's just sort of a twilight dreamscape version of the Badlands with you know, time lapse photography and you know, clouds and colors and strange things crossing across the sky, and we see ghosts. Movie opens with ghosts right away. Indians doing a ceremonial dance and a tree ghost. Did you see this?
Tree ghost?
Yeah, there's a ghost of a tree that disappears with them.
Didn't notice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, notice. It's like a Indian dance, you know, Indian village around of a campfire, kind of, and then it fades out, and part of that is the tree that they have with them.
Oops.
And then we see the murder that, you know, that the film centers around take place. Which is what's this guy's name? Leo Fastelk getting his chest burst open by a shotgun or a assault rifle, something like that.
Yep.
And falling in a river, and then we cut to Val Kilmer in DC. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Val Kilmer in DC. Val Kilmer is what, 164th Ogallala Sioux or something like that.
Well,
no, his father was Sioux.
He's a quarter, they say.
He's a quarter Sioux.
Uh-huh. And that would be an example of whitewashing, is what they I believe the term is. This is sort of before that was a term, where you cast a white actor to play an Indian character. Although the thing is, Val Kilmer, according to the press material for this film, is himself a quarter Cherokee, which, you know.
Oh, okay. No kidding.
If they say so, I suppose. I've never heard anything about that other than, yeah, I mean, it's, he claims Cherokee ancestry is what it says. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that would be not unlike the Johnny Depp, Lone Ranger film where he said he had, he was part Indian or something like that. and that was really like a 164th kind of situation. have you seen The Lone Ranger, by the way, Dad?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that an episode? What do you think? There's a lot
maybe
to say
much
about it.
Much later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway. But his character, Ray Lavoie,
yep,
is a quarter Sioux. So the Federal Bureau of Investigation decides they would like somebody who has Sioux blood on the case for this murder that just took place that we just saw out on the Sioux Indian Reservation, which is also a tinderbox of civil unrest between the nationalist and the traditionalist version wings of the Sioux Nation, and also the FBI is getting involved in that as well, as we find out. But yeah, he's chosen because of his Indian heritage, and he is briefed by former senator or what's this guy's name, Fred Dalton Thompson. This guy, you know this actor?
Fred Thompson, yeah, the guy that actually wanted to run for president at one point.
He did, yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on Law and Order, and he's in one of the Die Hard films. A lot of movies from the 90s. And I'm always playing this kind of guy, you know?
Yeah, an official suit.
Yeah, uh-huh. He's usually kind of straight-talking, you know? He's a good exposition machine, for sure, Fred Dalton Thompson. So it's nice to see him. And yeah, he talks about the Aboriginal Rights Movement, which is the this film's version of AIM, or ARM, as they're called in this. And talked about them. They are the traditionalists who are, you know, running into conflict against the government-abetted nationalist party, which is, well, they don't really have a name. Oh, yeah, they do. The Goons, which they... Yeah, that's great. Uh huh. What are the guardians of the Ogallala Nation? They that's quite a name to choose. so yeah, he's going to the Badlands. He's going to meet up with Roy. No, he's Roy. Frank Coutel, the Sam Shepard character, his FBI contact in the South Dakotas, and And yeah, or cooch. And yeah, that's just the setup, you know, like the this is your job, go to your job scene in the film. And
And they want it wrapped up in 3 days, right?
Is that reasonable, do you think?
No.
No.
No. But they want it done in 3 days.
I guess in law enforcement, the first 48 hours are the most important. There's a whole show about it, but still, yeah. If you're sending a Fed from Washington, go in. I don't know. That feels like a long haul kind of situation. And there's certainly
It
stuff
ended
going
up
on here.
being.
I mean, everything about this looks like there's a conspiracy.
Yep. Set up right from the word go.
Yeah. And so yeah, he meets up with Sam Shepard at the airport. Sam Shepard in this film is awesome. Oh man, what a good performance. I
He
love
is.
Sam Shepard as an actor. He has so much authenticity to him.
Authenticity, that's a good word for Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
You always feel like he is the guy he's portraying. Yep.
This is back when he appeared only like sporadically in films, you know, because he's one of the most famous American playwrights, mostly. And you know, he would
And
show up.
stage actor, right?
What's that?
Did he and he acted a lot. He's acted a lot on stage, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, he's very accomplished, clearly. He didn't show up in movies too often. He was, you know, The Right Stuff, of course. I believe he, I don't know if he was nominated for that. Anyway, he's awesome in it. And just every now and then, Sam Shepard shows up in something. And lately, I feel like he's in more crappy movies.
Yeah.
I've seen him in a lot of junk action movies in the last, like, 15 years, I feel like. Less so now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he still married to Jessica Lange?
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know that he was at all married to Jessica Lange.
Yeah, they were husband and wife. I haven't heard anything about them, so I assume they are still husband and wife.
Huh. Well, I'm gonna Google it right now while we're talking about it. This is good gossip here. This is the stuff people are gonna be interested in, I feel like.
Well, I think he directed Jessica Lange in something.
I mean, at some point, you know, just the fact that they're both so Southern Gothic, he must have.
I think he directed her in The Story of Patsy Cline. I can't remember the title of the film, though.
That could be. Let's see here. I can't find it easily.
Don't worry about it.
All right. Yeah, there it is, Jessica Lange. The two have children. They separated in 2009. Aww.
Ah, bummer.
Okay. Well, anyway, he's terrific. Terrific, in this film. This character is very interesting. I wish there was more of him, frankly. He kind of
Yeah.
disappears for chunks of the film. But yeah, he's Val Kilmer's partner. And yeah, they head out for the hills to look at the corpse of Leo Fastuck, which has been left there for days, I guess, because it's federal jurisdiction. That's
Right. And the Sioux aren't, yeah, the Sioux, well, this is what happens once they're out there looking at the body, right?
Yeah,
Graham Greene shows up.
Graham Greene shows up, yeah.
And he wants to take the body to for the official ceremonial burial and the saying goodbye ceremony, sort
Yeah.
of.
Graham Greene is playing Walter Crowhorse, which is he's, you know, a tribal cop, you know, reservation cop, I guess, like as a character on Longmire would have been one of these, right? What we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he also is excellent in the film. as we were saying. And yeah, he's got a good look too. I like his the leathered vest and the hat with the feather.
Yep. Yep. The motorcycle, the whole thing.
Yeah. And yeah, so they kind of have an altercation out at the body, Leo Fast Elk, or not fast enough, as Coutel says. I love that. You know, and Walter Fast Crowhorse calls him the Federal Bureau of Intimidation, and this is great because it's just sort of a character-based representation of sort of the push-pull conflict between the reservation traditionalists and the government that sort of informs the whole film, is here just enacted sort of as a personal matter, and that's great. That's great.
So very quickly, who are the security forces that are predominantly white? Are they part of the goons?
Those are the goons. Yeah,
those are the goons.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And they're supporting the more how should I put it? Federalized version of the Sioux Nation.
Yes. Uh-huh. Government sympathizers, and they are not supposed to be white. Actually, they are. We're meant
supposed to
see
to be
them.
Part Indian.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They are whiter. The actors that they've cast in these roles are much more, you know, much paler, much white guy looking actors, including Fred Ward, who is the head of them. Jack Milton, the tribal president, great actor Fred Ward, not Indian at all, but he's playing this. That's kind of a neat little way of indicating who they are, I think, on Michael Apted's part, is casting whiter actors in these roles. Although, you know, as you say, what it does kind of look like sometimes is that they're just a bunch of white guys. but they are technically members of the Sioux Nation, and the acronym indeed is Guardians of the Oglala Nation. They're the anti-arm contingent, and they're sort of, you know, they are technically in charge. You know, he's the tribal president, and they're violent. They just roust people and, you know, aggressive in their pursuit of the arm activists. And, they look like bad guys right away.
Right down to the black hat and the sunglasses and the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. They come up with two persons of interest based on just arm leadership. And that is that includes James Looks Twice, who is their... that's the suspect. They believe it's James Looktwice. They think that they have him threatening Leo Fast Elk at some point. They have that officially, and so they just decide he's the guy. And like, as Shepard puts it, he's my doer. That's my doer, Ray. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then they go to pick up Jimmy Looktwice at a sweat lodge. This is great. This is. Which is, you know, there's like they've got a teepee that they are smoking out, filling with steam, and there's like a dozen guys in it that they pull out.
Yeah, it's just a little hut.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Little sweat hut.
Mm-hmm. So cool. Uh-huh. And so then they haul
them
off.
Is this the first time we see the old guy?
This is the first time that we see, yes, the medicine man. Chief Sam Reaches is his name. He's just comes
also
up.
A great job.
Yeah. this is the central medicine man of the film is here with James Looks Twice at the Sweat Lodge. And he's just one of the guys coming out of the hut at this point. But he ends up being very important. and they take Jimmy to his house to look for evidence or, do a search of his place because he's their suspect. And he's flying the flag upside down, which he points out is a distress signal that he used in Vietnam. and this is this has the attack badger scene.
Ah, yes. You get the key in the coffee can under the stairs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sam Shepard reaches under the stairs and gets bitten by a badger, which, and then for the rest of the film,
badgers.
He has his arm wrapped up because he has badger wounds on it.
I'm sure he had to have a rabies shot.
Yeah, for sure. Whole series of them. Rabies shots are no joke. That's like, you do that for like 7 weeks and it's like a series of them right in your stomach. It sucks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. You ever had that done?
No. No. That would... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Jimmy escapes in the badger-related confusion and maybe turns into a deer.
Maybe. He's a shapeshifter.
This is the beginning of the weird spiritualism in the film. Well, I guess not, because we saw the ghosts at the beginning, but there is very much an undercurrent, not even an undercurrent, this is a plot point, this is a major plot point, that there is Native American mysticism and straight up magic, really, just straight up like spells and witchcraft and stuff going on in this movie, which I guess is as good a reason as any why it's not just not the Leonard Peltier story.
But it makes it, I think they use the mysticism very well in the film.
I do too. I like it.
And it's very satisfying
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's used to illuminate kind of the points that they're saying about what's going on the reservations. And in a way, it is cultural representation. This is showing Native American beliefs in sort of a, you know...
Cultural representation, but also cultural justification.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
You know?
It's about, like, you know, what this stuff, you know, what the significance of this is for these people today, and which is that it still has some. I mean, it's treated, I guess, as you would treat something like an offshoot religion, you know, which, this is an interesting thing. In movies, offshoot religions, such as witchcraft or voodoo, which are legitimate things, are treated as more powerful and more magic than traditional religion. Stuff that is not familiar or not, you know, because I guess I think I read a whole article about this a while back, so I'm talking slightly out of my ass again here. But the general idea is that these are not familiar to most people. Most people don't know voodoo practitioners, so they can get away with actually working, like actually having real world magical ability. You know, if that's not something that you're familiar with every day. Whereas if you do that with in a movie that is about Christianity, then it is a faith-based film, you know?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And that's how the magic is treated in this film, I would say. It's sort of exotic, and that's why we have a white guy lead coming in as sort of the audience identification character. Even if he does have Native American blood in him, but that's...
I was just going to say... Go ahead.
No, that, please. I'm babbling.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, the focus on Christianity in movies, if you go way back to the 30s and 40s, it's much more respectful of religion. Movies like Song of Bernadette, you know, treat the miraculous happenings at Lourdes mm-hmm. as, you know, as a serious possibility.
You don't see that much
anymore. No, I was just going to say, modern day looks at Christianity, particularly mm-hmm. the Roman Church,
yeah,
you know, are more unsympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, we had the 70s. Yeah.
we don't see the good priests like Bing Crosby and Spencer Tracy and, you know, guys like, there were so many back in the 30s and 40s. Going My Way, you know, Boys Town, those movies.
Oh, Boys Town, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of representation of the church
preacher's
involved
wife.
In those films. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or the bishop's wife, the preacher's wife.
Right, bishop's wife, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, hey, you know what? Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Well, even that's fantastic. Sure. That's, you know, that's the old world religion, even as it is Christianity. But I guess they don't want to be denominational because they're trying to hit larger demographics. You know, I don't know. I mean, faith-based films exist. Movies about faith, even movies that aren't specifically, you know, a faith film like the God's Not Dead movies or something like that. They're movies with Christ or with the power of belief in Christian God are represented. I don't want to make a blanket statement there, but it not in the big ones so much, not anymore.
Right.
Which do feel more comfortable with, you know,
Well, there are a lot of TV movies with Bible themes.
Oh, there's a ton, yeah.
You know, there's a ton of those, but nothing for the, you know, no, there aren't as many. In fact, I can't think of anything recently that, you know, in a big budget film that presents religion in that favorable light that we saw back in the days of the Ten Commandments, for example, and you know, back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and 50s.
One that always springs out in my mind is Amistad, the Spielberg film.
That's a good movie.
It has a long sequence in the middle about the Sierra Leone guys, the prisoners discovering, understanding, coming to understand the Americans by through the Bible.
The Bible, yeah.
Yeah, through the story of Christ, basically. That's. I mean, we're getting far off Thunderheart here, I suppose.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
It is,
and
and this is even fewer movies, I would say, deal with Native American spiritualism. And if it is,
right.
it's often just sort of as like just sort of a medicine man that has some sort of spiritual meaning, I would say.
There's a little bit. Do you remember Hidalgo?
No, I did not see Hidalgo.
You never saw Hidalgo?
Never saw it.
Oh,
Yeah.
we should do that one.
Yeah, I'll do Hidalgo. Let's watch Hidalgo one of these days.
Hidalgo's,
Sure.
yeah, good movie.
I love
but
Vigo.
there's some of, there's a little bit of that, the ghosts,
Even
you know,
Natural
kind of
Born
appear
Killers,
to
the
help him
Oliver
out.
Stone film, has just like a, has a magic Indian man, in it, who comes in and means something. That was played
I've
by
never seen that.
Russell Means from Last of the Mohicans, and also from the real life AIM movement. He was one of the leaders of, Yes.
Who did Russell Means play in Last of the Mohicans?
Chingachgook.
Oh,
Yeah.
right.
Real life,
Right.
advocate for Indian rights, all through the 70s
Cool.
and beyond.
What a great name, Chingachgook.
Indians have great names. They all, I love the names in this film, by the way. The Leo
Maggie
Fastow.
Eagle Bear.
What's that guy? James Yellow Feather. All those are good. So Jimmy Looks Twice has escaped. The goons show up. They're messing up the neighborhood, rousting everybody and ripping up the everyone's, everyone's houses, which, look, everyone's kind of, this is like a poor neighborhood anyway, so, no one's going to do anything about it. And at this point, we're kind of meeting more and more people. What's this guy? Maggie Eagle Bear. Walter Red Crow, I believe, shows up and uses his sort of, my getting the names wrong here. What is his name? Graham Greene. Graham Greene, Walter
Yeah.
Crow Horse, shows
Crow
up.
horse. Yeah.
And tells him to, this corpse has been moved, because he has kind of Sherlock Holmes abilities. And you can tell by the
Yeah.
red clay, he was in water first. And you got to listen to the trees. A lot of stuff like
Listen to the
that.
trees and the wind.
And so that kind of leads him to the place that Walter suggests. This is Val Kilmer goes there, and that's where he meets Maggie Eagle Bear, who is another one of the head traditionalists. A school teacher, she's taking care of a bunch of kids and a guy in a wheelchair. She's super nice, and we're supposed to think she's super nice right away. And a grandma, I don't know, who's sort of also sort of non-specifically has ties to the spirit world, as an elder.
Right.
She's the one who talks about Jimmy's ability to shapeshift, and he wants to talk to Grandma because Grandma would have been present at the time when the murder took place outside, so she would have information. But she doesn't want Grandma to talk to him. This is kind of an exposition scene, but in getting to know this character and more culture of the ARM movement. And we
Right.
meet the guy in the wheelchair, Richard Yellowhawk, who calls him the Washington Redskin, which is
Right.
the pejorative that everyone starts calling Val Kilmer in this. And And yeah, so it was just meeting characters in this scene, I would say. I like her. I like this actress. Never seen her in anything, you know. Definitely full-blooded yep. Indian, so, you know, probably doesn't have as many opportunities as it is. I wonder if she's a you know, local actress, maybe, even.
Yeah. That could be.
Yeah. Let's see. there's a scene shortly after with Sam Shepard and Val Kilmer at a bar where they're just kind of chatting, you know, talking about what they both found, and a fight breaks out with in the background, just apropos of nothing. Yeah. Remember this?
Wait, was that the same scene where the Molotov cocktail was thrown through the window?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, just two guys start having, you know, just brawling, and then a Molotov cocktail comes in the window. Just, you know, this is not related to the larger plot. This is just, you know, the place that they are. This is
right. This is the antagonism between the arm movement and the goons.
Yeah, because it's a goon bar, I would imagine.
Right, you know, goon bar.
If Kutel is there, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good movie. as a mystery, what do you think? I think the mystery elements of this film are among the weaker parts of it. There's a lot of reliance on very obvious clues and sort of leaps of of deductive reasoning and also, you know, things that just sort of fall into people's laps.
Well, Crowhorse fills us in real quickly on what really happened.
Yeah, Crowhorse.
I mean, he's got it all figured out.
Crowhorse is Sherlock Holmes, essentially.
Right.
Yeah, but with, you know, but he's more interested in just, you know, the in the larger conflict and also in his own spiritualism, anyway. But
yeah.
And so yeah, they hook up again. Like, Val Kilmer is supposed to be out. What is he out supposed to be doing? Something for Kutel. But, yeah, he's just trying to...
Tracking down,
Jimmy looks to him. Yeah.
Jimmy.
Yeah, uh-huh. Just everyone's looking for Jimmy. He's out supposed to be grilling the traditionalists, trying to get more information on where Jimmy is. But he just kind of hooks up with Graham Greene, and they go hang out. Like, that's, there's a pretense.
It's Graham Greene that directs him to the old man,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh, the old man. The Sam reaches the medicine man living in an RV out on the side of a bluff. What a good location, huh? This is an awesome,
yeah,
awesome spot right on the top of this hill with the Badlands beneath him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just an old guy, you know, living out in the desert. But he also has great spiritual significance for the arm traditionalists. They believe him to be a man of great power, all that, and this is one of the major characters in the film, as it turns out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought he did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that you know, he continually speaks Sioux, even though he can speak English.
Yeah,
so Graham Greene has to translate for him.
Yeah, and he's sort of goofy, you know, watching Mr. Magoo, you know, saying...
Magoo.
Yeah, Magoo! And, you know, forcing people to talk about Mr. Magoo with him, you know, stuff. This Magoo, he's not to be trusted. I don't know, I mean, and... You know, he takes Roy's Ray-Bans, his nice sunglasses, and gives him a rock because he has to do an exchange to get
a trade,
information.
Yeah.
I got to admit, if I'm Val Kilmer, at this point, I'm kind of just done with these guys. I think I'm done. I'm done listening to their stuff, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to go find this guy.
Well, and that's what he is thinking until the old man gives him his life story.
Right. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah, he has the... he sees... a vision of Ray and his father, his half Indian father when he was a kid, and Ray right. being ashamed of his father when he was young, and then they smoke a peace pipe and you know, stuff about listen to the owls in the water and they'll tell you secrets, things like that, real Twin Peaks kind of narrative, you know, tricks. yeah, so So yeah, he kind of just has this experience, but it doesn't help him get any closer to on this case. But he does learn that the way to parlay with the elders in this tribe is to bring them gifts, is sort of a sign of respect, or
Right.
bartering even, and that's how he sort of gets in Grandma's good graces back at Maggie, what's her name?
Eagle Bears.
Maggie Eagle Bear's grandmother. Yeah. Now, did you think there was going to be romance with Maggie Eagle Bear at some point?
I did,
Yeah, me
early.
too. No, as it
Nope.
turns out. But while
No,
he's
that's
there,
cut short, yeah.
making an impression on Grandma and Maggie Eagle Bear and talking about what a good person she is and stuff like that, goons show up and start shooting up the house just because she is a leader in the armed movement. Guys just show up on pickup trucks and start loading, firing semi-automatic rifles into the house. One of the kids gets winged in the arm, and it's rough. It's some City of God stuff. This is like, the kind of stuff that doesn't feel like America. This is more third world kind of thing happening.
And this, I think, is the moment where Val Kilmer kind of shifts his thinking.
Yes.
And he also comes in the good graces of Maggie Eagle Bear when he helps her with the kid who got winged. And he begins to think, okay, well, things are not as they seem.
There's some obviously heinous shit going down here.
Yep.
And so he heads off to the goon base and just sees some of the guys in trucks and just starts beating the shit out of them. That's so
Yeah.
cool. Oh man, he really looks like he knows what he's doing. It's great. like pulling people out of trucks and slamming their head against the door and stuff. Oh, is awesome. And you kind of need something like that at this point in the movie, which has been, it's.
A little bit of action, yeah.
Kutel kind of steps in. He's like, okay, calm down. These are our friends. These are our friends. Which is sort of when you start to get weird vibes from Kutel as well.
Right.
Yeah, I love saying that name, by the way. That's.
Kutel. You get weird vibes off Kutel almost from the beginning, I think.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean,
He's telling him to wrap it up in 3 days. Obviously, there's something they're hiding.
Yes. But he tells him he's been with the medicine man. He says, he is an important figure for them, so maybe you should stay there and stake that out. So he kind of leads him back to the medicine man.
Well, thinking that Jimmy's going to show up there as well.
That's correct. I mean, that is what they're after. And as James is part of that movement, a traditionalist, like he was going to go seek out his spiritual leader as he's on the lam, even though he's clearly, going to be looked for there. although he could just show up as a dog, so that would work. This is one of my favorite runners, actually, is the as he's this dog that Val Kilmer kind of befriends and keeps talking to as if he's Jimmy. I'll give you some milk if you shapeshift, stuff like that. And yeah, he let's see, where are we at here? He's he's staking this out, hanging out with this dog, and then Walter shows up and says, "Come on, let's go to the powwow. I want to teach you more about the traditionalist movement." I would still
That's
be
right.
hesitant at this point to trust Walter. I think.
Crow horse?
Yeah.
Why? He's been right all
Oh,
along.
he's been screwing with him, though. He's totally been screwing with him. I mean, it's a roundabout way of getting him on his side, but the stuff with the Ray-Bans, which he ends up in possession of.
Oh. Yeah.
All the Washington Redskins stuff. I mean, no one trusts Val Kilmer either, really. But yeah, they do end up at a powwow that is culturally very much pro-arm, pro-traditionalists. It's cool. It's a Native American celebration. You run into Yellow Hawk in the wheelchair again. Hey, I'm FBI too, full-blooded Indian. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they compare notes about the crime. Walter's saying a little bit more Sherlock Holmes stuff, you know? It's like, I tell you one thing, it was an Indian that did it. And the way the body was turned down, you know, face down, that's so he won't come back looking for vengeance. cool things like that. And this, I believe, is where we start hearing about the past lives. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the wounded knee thing.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's pretty cool. I mean, Ray gets some visions at this point, and I wonder if this is the scene. I read this. This is very specious. I don't know much of if this is true at all, but allegedly there is a scene cut out of this film where Ray does peyote. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then has visions of of his drunk father and of wounded knee, and we see some of the visions for sure. There, you know, when he sees himself at the massacre of Wounded Knee from the 1870s, I believe that was part of that sequence. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Uh huh. It's
where did you read that there was a deleted scene?
Oh, I read it on the internet. On Wikipedia, you know, this is like put it there because they believed that, and maybe it's true or maybe it's not. Maybe it's on the DVD, but I don't know because I watched it streaming, and it's very much an asterisk kind of piece of information. I don't know that I would rely on that as fact, but it also makes sense. I can see it. I'm not sure why it would be cut out, but. He does just start having visions, looking at a fire and freaking out, and that could, I suppose, just be the voice of the past, you know, coming into him and influencing him in that way. Anyway, it's a rumor. Interesting rumor.
I love the scene in when Graham Greene and Val Kilmer are in the car.
Oh, it's
driving
so good.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It starts talking about how. Val Kilmer had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a vision, man. I can go my whole life waiting for a vision. I've never had a vision. You had a vision.
Yeah. You've been here 3 days. Now you had a vision. You didn't have a vision. How the hell with that? You did have a vision. You had a goddamn vision. Yeah. Oh, man. They do. They find the murder weapon at Jimmy's place. It's an obvious plant, but they're, you know, it is a it's enough for them to mobilize, and this is where you get the compelling Sam Shepard monologue about a conquered people. You know, I'm saying these are very sympathetic people. They have reason to feel the way they feel, but personally, I've seen too many dead federal agents out here to have a completely open view of them. Stuff like that. It's why you hire a guy like Sam Shepard. Very good stuff. Now, how do they find the car? This is a.
I think the water level sinks. The water level sinks.
Oh yeah, they're straight up just driving away. And Walter is there on the road, and they're just like, "Get out of the road, Walter!" And he's like, "Oh no, wait, come look at this!" And he just points down off into the body of water, and there's Leo Fastow's stolen car, yeah. And Sam Shepard says, "God damn it!" Yeah. And they find the car. Water level changed, and. They find a large man's jacket in it, which would not fit Jimmy
Fastow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, looks twice. Jimmy looks twice.
Jimmy looks twice, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Leo Fastow.
Right. Mm-hmm. With a raffle ticket in the pocket, which Ray pockets because he doesn't trust it. He's getting on thin ice here.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He knows. But he knows
something wrong. Yeah.
He sees some conspiracy. So he's not sharing with the feds all the information that he finds here, specifically this smoking gun that points directly at the criminal. this is what I'm talking about with the mystery being a little bit like, well, yeah.
Well, he had to get the name from Maggie Eaglebear.
Yeah, I think it's expedient. I think this is like This is, you know, this is like a piece of evidence that proves conclusively exactly who did it, and also survived being underwater for a few some time. It was,
Right.
But yeah, there was a raffle ticket that was worn by that was in the jacket of the guy who stole the car, and the guy who stole the car killed Leo, and so there, you know. We're getting ghost visions more and more often, getting run down by cavalry. You know, he's seeing Wounded Knee. He's running, you know, across the field with a bunch of Native Americans. And I love these visions too because it's, you know, period appropriate 1870s costumes for everyone except Val Kilmer, who is dressed in his short sleeve field agent in costume.
With
I'm just like
a
running alongside them.
tie, yeah.
Getting shot down
That's
by
where we get
guys.
the that's where we get the one horse in the movie.
Yes, that makes it a Western. I don't know. Does this count as a Western, would you say?
Well, as much as Hell or High Water does.
Yeah, I mean, Hell or High Water feels more specifically like the kind of movie that a Western, you know, kind of story a Western tells. This is a cop film. This is a, you know, this is a thriller, police film. That
But there's also
happens
a
to
lot of
have.
Indian mysticism that, you know,
Right. Well, that's the stuff, yeah.
I would say gives it that Western feel.
It definitely has. And I mean the just the scenery alone, you know, the iconography of
The
a medicine
Badlands, yeah.
man you know, performing a ceremonial dance in the Badlands, you know, right on the crest of those crazy looking rock formations, you know, that it summons a time and place, and even if that time isn't the Old West, it is recognizably a place that is deeply influenced by the Old West, by that period of time, and
Right.
that would I it feels like a Western to me. This didn't feel
Yeah,
as
me too.
off market as some things that we've watched.
Is it more of a Western than Last of the Mohicans?
Yeah, for sure, I would say.
Yeah.
By the way, those probably the two movies we've watched that are most directly dealing with Native Americans would be those two films, which we are now wondering if they're even Westerns.
And they are. It's because we did them on Westerns with Dad.
Would Dances with Wolves be the most purely Western? Most pure Western focused on Native American culture.
Ooh, that's a good point.
There's precious few.
Yeah,
There are just
probably.
not that many.
Little Big Man has a
Oh,
lot of
that's a good call. Good call,
Indian
Little Big Man.
influence.
Which went on to influence Johnny Depp in The Lone Ranger.
Oh no.
No, that would be an interesting movie to talk about, though, because it's trying to be about Native American culture too, and about a Native American genocide, and it also is trying to be like a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. It does a lot of stuff wrong, real bad, but it has weird intentions, that movie. Also tries to be like a really
Weird
it tries to be a really empathetic film about Native Americans, but it also has this ridiculous Johnny Depp Tonto performance where he's just, you know, he's wearing a bird as a hat and putting
Yeah.
on a funny voice and doing all sorts of nonsense. It's a bad movie, but an
Yep.
interesting one.
Yeah, maybe later.
Sometime in 2018. Okay. So we're getting into the final act of this film, the third act resolution. He's seeing visions of Wounded Knee because he is the reincarnation of an Indian named Thunderheart. Val Kilmer is. Now there was some strange prophecy stuff here where he was going to come back to help his people or something like that, and that's how they know he's Thunderheart.
Yeah.
It's not extrapolated on too much, but he's definitely the reincarnation of an Indian killed at Wounded Knee. And that he starts to actually see visions of it, and I you know I you think this this works, right? This is good. This is
Yeah, I think it works great.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're skeptical of mysticism in general, it works well in the film.
Yeah. I mean, is there a way to read this film where they are this is a long con that they're running on him?
I don't think they want you to read
that. No, they
that
don't
way.
Want you that. But that's a good point. They don't want that at all. But so anyway, he convinces Maggie to show him the rolls for the raffle tickets. Even though it's, you know, she doesn't want to do it particularly, but, you know, she trusts him, so she lets him have it. And it's Yellowhawk, who's the guy in the wheelchair. And that seems impossible, because he's in a wheelchair. How would he run a guy down, you know? And it's because he's not actually crippled.
Yeah.
Yeah. He made a deal. Val Kilmer goes and to his place and confronts him when he figures it out. He made a deal for early release for when he was in jail with the federal government to kill Leo and make it look like Arm. I mean, you know, it was headed by Kutel. Kutel was directly involved in it, and probably Jack Milton, the tribal president, as well. The wheelchair thing is a fake, so no one will suspect him. And it's, you know, this is a this is the resolution to the mystery, and that they want to discredit Arm and also remove impediments for a land grab that they are attempting to deal with, to go uranium mining and pollute the shit out of this reservation with their.
They've already started.
Yes. Uh huh. And this also was very much based on what was going on in the 70s. The uranium mining that they just tried to steal off of the reservation, that happened for real. That was a big part of what the AIM movement was pissed off about. It you know, wasn't particularly well resolved either, I think, which is why probably one of the reasons that Michael Apted is making documentaries and feature films about it still, you know, years later. They go out to the Red Deer Table, which is the formation
it's the old man that tells them to go there.
Yeah. And they find the uranium the drills, the that they've been surveying the drill, I don't know mining. They're testing for uranium.
Yeah. Potholes that they've
runoff.
Created.
Right.
With that polluted water.
Yeah. And that's the conspiracy. To do this major land grab and remove the Native American resistance to it, because if there's no Arm movement to draw attention to this, then nobody's gonna listen. Like there's just no governmental momentum in actually providing oversight for this sort of thing, and they'll just do it. They'll just get away with it, because you know the reservation is not the U.S.
Right. So Crowhorse and Ray go out to Red Deer Table.
Red Deer Table. Yeah.
Red Deer Table.
Yeah.
And they find the uranium pots and the whole thing, and they also find Maggie Eagle Bear.
Yeah. Wow.
It was that first time I saw this.
Brutal.
That surprised me.
Uh-huh.
Because first of all, like you said, you know, you expect there to be some kind of romantic interlude with Maggie Eagle Bear and between Maggie Eagle Bear and Val Kilmer, but it never happens, and she ends up dead.
Yeah.
Which is a real plot.
Yeah, it's messed up. The movie gets real serious here at the end, before it gets a little silly.
So when do they go back? So they find Maggie Eagle Bear.
Yeah.
And they go back. Why do they go back again?
To arrest Yellowhawk.
Yellowhawk.
They're
going to
get Yellowhawk.
And they find him.
You know, hey, you're going to. We need you now. You got to tell him about this. You know.
Right.
We need you to testify. I'm not sure why they left Yellowhawk alone, to be honest, but.
Yeah, because he's no longer living when they get back.
He has killed himself, allegedly. It's a pretty obvious fake suicide. And the goons, roll in, and they are surrounded immediately, and they run. They hop in a car and run, and this is a pretty cool car chase that's shot with helicopters at this point. This is great. The car driving out through the village being chased. It's just a shot you're not used to seeing. It's a very far distance, so you get a wide view of a lot of cars engaged in a chase, and then they're out on the plains, and it's a fairly ordinary chase. But they're totally gonna kill these guys at this point, right? This is Coutel and Milton and everybody is chasing him. There's no way they can let them live now. Let alone, I mean, and he's got a tape. He's also got a tape of Yellowhawk confessing, you know.
That's right.
Which he plays to Coutel over the police radio. And then it's just like, well, you didn't really have a chance before, but. Yeah. And I don't love this ending, I got to admit. They may have written themselves into a corner here, but.
Shades of Quigley Down Under.
Yes, the Quigley Down Under ending. It feels a little less reasonable in this scenario that they all knew.
Where are they going to go with it, though?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they got to, you know, they got to escape in some fashion, I suppose. But what it is they run up against a rock wall, and they're cornered by the bad guys, and you know, they're basically just like hiding behind rocks and yelling at them, just like, yeah. We know what you did, and and yeah, they're just going to kill them all. And you know, Sam Shepard is being as reasonable as he can. He's just like, "Why are you making me do this, Ray? Come on, Ray! And you got not giving me a lot of choices here, Ray." Stuff like that. And then yeah,
oh, he picks up his rifle and he's about to shoot when the Indians show up.
All the entire arm movement, essentially, I guess has been waiting. Like,
yeah,
was this planned?
The old
out?
Man told him.
Yeah, was it the was it?
Well, yeah, because you can see their parked cars up on top of the mesa.
Mm-hmm. So, was this always the plan? I did not get the sense this was always the plan.
Well, the old chief, the old man, told him where to go.
I guess he could tell them where to go because he has spiritual powers. Is that what it was? Is it he knew because of...
Yeah, he had spiritual, spiritual powers told him where to go.
Right.
So...
Yeah, it's okay.
Ray went where he was told.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, well, I guess it's a big standoff. And, you know, there's more guys, more Indians with guns who have the upper ground, the higher ground. So, you know, they are cowed. And it sort of fades off, but I guess, yeah, they just, it all worked out is kind of the implication. And
first time I saw it, I thought there was going to be a shootout.
Oh, man. That might have been cool. I mean, I like the characters. I don't want any of them to really get blown away, but it might have been pretty cool.
A shootout would have been great. Yeah. And we still could have kept Kilmer and Crowhorse alive.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean... The real world events did not end with a massive shootout, so I suppose, you know, well, I don't know, you're already making everything, all the characters are made up names, so, you know, the events do not mirror anything other than being clearly inspired by them. It's, you know, there's no one-to-one comparison. I don't know. It's... I don't know if a bloodbath would have been the way to end this. It's not that kind of film, but it would have been cool. I mean, well, I guess the other thing is, if that had happened, like, there's no way that these guys are going to be okay, you know? At that point, it's a terrorist organization, as far as the government is concerned.
Hmm.
You know? Assuming they do blow away the entire, you know, the tribal president and his private army. Yeah, and some federal agents. You know, who are accommodating a land deal, a land grab, a land con.
Do we ever find out if it's the federal government wanting the land, making the land grab, or if it's Coutel and a small group of guys?
It's Jack Milton, with the aid of certain members of the federal government, like Coutel. So right. It's not officially on the book grab. It is the federal government, members of the federal government, aiding and abetting the land grab for the the tribal
unauthorized members of the government.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it all kind of works out. We hear that that Kutel is under what is it? Under investigation. I mean, that's as much as we get about what happens there.
right.
And Ray is now out of the FBI. Kind of a combination of he quit, they weren't going to let him stay, kind of deal. Like he was done working for him. There's a nice little thing, a little mirroring of moments in that, where early on when he's talking to Kutel, right after he arrives on the reservation, and he's talking about look at your people out here, look what they're doing. He says, "Oh, they're not my people." And then at the end, when Walter is talking about the government, you know, about the federal agents and what's going to happen now on the reservation, he's like, "Oh no, this." He refers to Ray as a federal agent. He's like, "Oh no, they're not my people anymore." Screenwriting.
I didn't notice that. That's
screenwriting.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And yes, and he leaves. You know, he doesn't know what he's going to do, and as evidenced by him with his car at a crossroads. Unsure which way to turn, and that's the end of the film.
Yep.
Good film.
Good movie.
I really...
Good movie. How many stars do you give it?
I'm leaning on 4.5 out of 5. I'm very tempted.
I was going to say a solid 4.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. It is a solid 4, yep. Yeah. Let's go 4. Let's say 4. Mm-hmm. It's a delightful movie. I think forgotten, you know, largely today. It needs to be seen more. It deserves a Blu-ray release. Deserves to be spoken of as one of the really good 90s police films, and certainly I would say the best film about best modern day film about Native Americans that I've seen. I mean, it's this or Smoke Signals, which is also very good, but but you know, Smoke Signals doesn't have any cops or gun or murders in it. it's, you know, this is more in keeping with the spirit of our podcast, and that would be an interesting episode, actually. Smoke Signals. Anyway, so that is that is Thunderheart. Strong recommendation. Seek this one out. It's really cool. Everyone's great in it.
Great movie. Uh-huh. Great movie.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I noticed in this movie is everybody was great. The performances were uniformly great.
Yeah.
But there was no Al Swearengen type of performance that was over the top. Mm-hmm. You know, they all worked well with each other, and there was nobody that stood out as the actor in the film.
Graham Greene's close. Graham Greene is he's the best character.
He's close, but like you said, you know, Sam Shepard is great.
That's true.
Val Kilmer does an incredible job.
Kilmer's awesome in this movie.
Does a great job.
We didn't talk much about him, but he's really terrific in this. He really carries the thing very well. It's a modest film in a lot of regards. This is a small movie, you know, but you go on a whole journey with it, and he carries it extremely well. Like this sort of, you know. It's him at his height when he was like really good and everything. You know, this was a few years before Tombstone, and it's, you know, back when he was an exciting presence in movies. I would like to see him come back. He's in deserving of a comeback.
So would I.
Yeah.
Yep. So hey.
Yes.
I actually got around to watching Hidden Figures.
All right, we're talking about movies we've
now
seen
that we're
recently.
We're talking about movies we've seen
yes,
recently.
Yes. Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm.
Great film.
Good movie, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Would like to have seen a little more detail on each of the three lives.
I think it gets a little bit into, you know, biopic kind of cliche a little bit. You know, in the telling of the story, that's something that most films that are about people, historical people, struggle with. And, you know, and it becomes rather conventional because of that, but it's an entertaining movie, and they're all really good in it. I particularly like Janelle Monáe, which is the younger one who is least serviced by the story, but I thought she had a real, real good energy, real, really interesting actress, you know.
The one that wants to go to school?
Yes, uh-huh. The youngest one.
Yeah. Right.
She's a musician primarily. I think this is her first big movie role.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. She's great. Amanda loves her.
They all did a great job, mm-hmm. I thought.
And Costner. There's a nice yeah. latter-day role for Costner in there, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That is a good movie. I saw recently, I watched The Beguiled.
The new one?
The new one. Not the Clint Eastwood one. Now, there's one that is just not quite a Western. that movie is just not quite a Western. It's a Civil War movie. It has very little to do with what a Western is traditionally. I wouldn't quite call it Civil War. It's more just a weird Gothic period thing. But, I mean, it would be interesting almost to talk about because it's Clint Eastwood playing like as pure an anti-hero as he ever played. And it's a Don Siegel film, and it ends very strange for a Clint Eastwood movie. That's an interesting movie, to say the least. The remake, I was hoping for a little bit more from it. But it's very good. It's very creepy, very tense. Knowing how it ended because of the Clint Eastwood film, I kind of felt like I was a step ahead of the film, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
The change in perspective, the male character is no longer the point of view character, I would say, in the remake. That's kind of the change. The female characters are, you know, you're seeing the story through their eyes, and nothing has changed really from the story point of view, but it's way more about how they're experiencing the events, and it's intriguing. Yeah. It's way less battle of the sexes than I thought it would be, and way more
self-preservation, survival kind of thing.
Yes, but also there's deep culpability and kind of just like that they're all deeply repressed and aren't really in control of their reasons. Like there's kind of two ways to see every situation, you know, and even from their point of view, you know, you're not entirely sure how honest they're being about what they're feeling, you know. What it is, it's a Civil War story about a wounded Union soldier that ends up being taken in and taken care of by a group of women who have sort of been cloistered during the war in an abandoned plantation. Like it's a school for young girls, and there's only the one guy in the whole film, and that's Colin Farrell in this, and there's war stuff, there's sex stuff, and it's it's an interesting, good movie. And I would say either is an interesting one to watch, but I don't know if they would pair well together, you know? Once you've seen one, I don't know how effective the other would be, and I don't know how much fault of the other. Anyway, it's good. It's good. I would recommend seeing either of them.
Yeah.
Walk, don't run, maybe. So, thank you for listening to our podcast. Really appreciate it. You can listen to our back episodes, of course, on iTunes. And if you would like to hear the episodes that got kicked off of iTunes once we hit our capacity, they are available on our website for download at no cost. That's westernswithdad.com. And, there's a fair number of them at this point. About a dozen that are only available on the website. Episodes such as Hateful Eight and Shane and The Magnificent Seven and Bone Tomahawk and a bunch of good stuff like
Katie
that.
Katie Elder, yeah.
So please take a look at those. Also, please leave us reviews and ratings on iTunes because they increase the profile and visibility of the podcast and get more downloads for us in the process because the show is then tiered higher. So we would really appreciate that. That would help us out very much. It's the single most helpful thing you can do for us is leave reviews and ratings on iTunes. And you can even, you know, you can even lie and about them how much you like it. You know, you can upgrade it. Say it's one of the best. You know, who's to know? also, you can reach us online through our website or also through the email address, westernswithdad@gmail.com. Send us any questions you'd like us to answer or any movies you'd like to see us talk about. We've got some lined up for along those lines. We'll be responding to those. So, be sure to, reach out to us. Thank you very much for listening as well. And go see Thunderheart. It's awesome.
Thanks.
What's next, Ed? Next time on the podcast, what are we doing?
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. This is the funniest Western ever made, right?
No doubt.
Far and away. Mm-hmm. Very excited about Blazing Saddles, the Mel Brooks classic. Classic next time. Enjoy your July. I believe that's it.
That'll do it. Adios, amigos.